Welcome to the 40th episode of Take Note. This is our podcast about taking notes, paying attention, being mindful, pens, pencils, paper, stationery. I'm here with my friend Adam. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing great, Ted. How are you?
I am also here with my friend Ryan. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Great to be back.
You may recognize Ryan from episode, I'm not going to pretend like I remember which episode it was, but he co-hosted with me when Adam couldn't make it for one of our earlier episodes, so it's good to have him back. Ryan and I are here in the Houston headquarters. Adam is in the northern quadrant, keeping the Chicagoland region on point. And we got some stuff to talk about. We're going to start with the segment that we call What Do You Got? By which I mean, what do you got in your notebook? What have you written down in the last week or so that caught your attention? Maybe you took a little time to spin a yarn. And we're going to start with our guest, Ryan. Ryan, what do you got?
I got a little tale that I wrote in my notebook that starts like this. After they'd been together a certain number of years, Gary began to confess all manner of sins as he and Allison were parting ways. I got a parking ticket. See you tomorrow. I ate the last cookie. Have a great day at work. I'm being investigated for wire fraud. Say hi to Sarah for me. It got to the point that Allison grew uneasy about even telling Gary she was leaving. Last Christmas, Gary was primed and ready to pull the old, we're completely bankrupt, I'm going out for ice, when he discovered Allison had already left. Not only that, but she'd emptied her drawers, the safe, the DVD library, and as it turned out, their bank account. Classic Allison.
The DVD library.
Which reminds me of one of my previous rants that I'm back on DVDs now.
It may have been written shortly after that conversation.
They'll take it back. Amazon, they can suck it back at any time. Anyway, sorry.
That's their slogan, here. I think. Amazon, they can suck it back at any time.
Oh, we're keeping up with the latest headlines here on the podcast. I love it.
Oh, man. I wasn't even... Okay.
Well, you did. You did. What do you got, Adam?
All right, Ted. I wrote in my.
Let me pause you for a second. What are you writing in? Give me the hot stuff.
You know what? I was going to tell you even without asking. I'm writing in a dead print edition. Those are notebooks made by Aaron Draplin, the creator of Field Notes, using old posters or maybe probably incorrectly printed posters. He then turns those into the covers on the Field Notes notebook. So this is a Louisiana Aaron Draplin poster.
Have any editions been better looking than those editions?
I mean, I like some of them. I don't like some of them. But this one, the poster itself has some gold ink on it. And then all of these editions have gold foil slammed on top with the Field Notes, 48-page memo book. It's a very pretty edition.
All right, what do you got?
I was on a plane last week. I wrote, saw that the pilot on this plane is wearing a turtleneck. Should I send an email to everyone I know to say goodbye forever? And underneath that, I wrote, flight attendant thumbs my tea bag into the paper cup.
Thumbs?
With her thumb.
Thumbs.
With her bare thumb on the bare tea bag, just right into the... And then I slurped it up.
Maybe she thought the boiling water would mitigate any germs that she delivered straight into your cup.
Yep. Yep.
Do you think it was a full turtleneck or was it a dicky under the pilot's uniform?
I would say it was a dicky no pilot's uniform. It was not the full turtleneck. And, you know, it was the strange gut feeling. Like, I just saw it and I went, this is not right. You know, I really felt in my, you know, I didn't really feel in my heart like the plane was going to go down because of this, but I did truly feel that, no, this is not what's supposed to be happening.
I mean, or could it be that you convince yourself the plane is going to go down, and you desperately search your environs for signs that your intuition is correct about the plane going down. I wore two turtlenecks last week, and I said to somebody in conversation, "It's turtleneck season." So I'm on team pilot on this one. I'm not surprised that your plane landed without incident, because a turtleneck can provide a nice and comforting feel around the neck that creates a sense of security.
Listen, you, it was a rocky landing. Whose side are you on?
All right. So
Ted, what do you got?
I'm still writing in my Chicago edition field notes. It has been taped up with some Lunar New Year washi tape and some Scotch tape. But I'm moving slow through this book. It's just that kind of month. But I wrote that I'm impressed by anyone with a license plate frame that names them as an accountant, which I saw in my work parking lot. Proposed additional license plate frames: comptroller, web developer, assistant VP of business, outside sales representative, graphic designer. That's if you're just looking for, I don't know if you're looking to spruce it up with a license plate frame.
I'd like to get an outside sales representative one, just aspirationally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ted, what is your title, Ted?
Are you being serious, or should I make up a really funny, goofy title on the spot?
I suspect that your real title will be a good, funny, goofy license plate frame title.
I am Associate Director of Foundation Relations.
Yeah, that's what I want on my license plate for sure. Yeah.
You can wrap it. It can wrap. That's the good thing about it.
You have to turn your head like 180, 210 degrees to read it all. Yeah.
It'll be tough to figure out if I'm an associate or an assistant director. But once you get into director and foundation, you'll be cruising.
Right.
Ryan, what do you got?
So I recently wrote in my Texas County Fair edition, the yellow one, with my Twisby Diamond 580 ALR fountain pen.
Yellow.
I was recently in Santa Fe for a ski trip with my wife, and we pulled up as we were coming into Santa Fe. There was a bumper sticker on a light pole that said, "Suzanne, thanks for nothing." Which I thought was amazing. And so I added to that list of bumper stickers, hating on Suzanne. Suzanne, you know what you did? Suzanne, what a total waste. WTF Suzanne.
WTF Suzanne.
My other car is parked on Suzanne. And finally, Suzanne happens.
Suzanne happens.
Those are my proposed anti-Suzanne bumper stickers.
All right, what do you got, Adam?
All right. I wrote, what's the name for someone who's more than a barber, but not quite a stylist? The haircut lady at Leo's was very nice, but she asked, "What happened here?" when she found two balding spots I was unaware of on the back, not the top, of my head. She recommended castor oil and shampooing from the back of my neck up and forward. This is what it has come to.
Alchemist, maybe?
Yeah. I don't know. Yep.
Yeah. She sounds distinctly medieval in her approach to... Mm-hmm.
When I told my wife Jennifer that this happened, there was like a knowing, like a, "Oh, I know about those spots that you didn't know about." Also,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
To the credit of my stylists, when I joke about my own thin areas, they play it off and they downplay it. It sounds like you're. Stylist went more with I don't even know what you would call that, just a full frontal assault on your sense of your head.
Anyone saying what happened here is an amateur. I'd also like to just draw attention to the fact that I wrote balding spots, not bald spots, because I didn't want to really come to terms with it myself.
And where are these balding spots? Are they just randomly located, well, or is it a pattern?
I've never seen them. There's two in the back of my head, supposedly. I mean, maybe just the not quite a stylist is sort of conspiracy with my wife to make me think that I'm balding back there. I don't know.
By not quite a stylist, do you mean wandered in off the street and stood behind the chair, and then you sat down and she started cutting?
Yeah.
Because that's the vibe.
Yeah.
The
Leo's has this vibe, actually. That's exactly the vibe that Leo's has. I may have previously described it to you as I'm going to call it a barbershop. I don't know what it is. The barbershop that makes you realize how clean all other barbershops are.
He's got a scissor guy.
Yeah, scissor guy. Yeah.
Yeah, go see my scissor guy.
Scissor guy, yep.
And Leo's like, hey, you finish sharpening my scissors. I got a haircut over here.
My experience in Leo's is always, I've never gotten a cut from Leo. And my buddy Kugler, who you know, Ted, always wants to know whether I got one of the Albanians cutting my hair when I'm in there. And I just never know how to answer that because it's not clear to me what ethnicity they necessarily are. I can't peg Albanians, . And
were the bald spots revealed to you before or after the haircut?
During.
Hey, you have these two randomly located bald spots for no reason whatsoever.
That's right.
Nothing that I did had anything to do with
that. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, newsflash, haircut boy. You have two bald spots. They're new. Get used to it.
Till next time. Despite all this, I usually get a really good haircut there, and it's a good price. Took my son to Leo's about a week after this incident. He's been there before, and it's all gone well. But he got a haircut that I keep turning to my wife and saying, I can't believe I paid for this. yeah.
Well, I've found in my experience with children's haircuts that the more flim-flammery that you find in the place, fire engines and TV screens and stuff, the worse the haircut's going to be.
Oh, that's I completely disagree. I find that if they're showing you cartoons...
That's why we do a podcast together. We like to keep it hot.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, Adam, you wanted to touch on some podcasting you heard elsewhere?
Yeah, that's right. This is the I Listen to Another Podcast segment of the show. there is a podcast I had never heard of before called Commerce Minded. It is it is made by the Foster Commerce Software, which is like an e-commerce software. And the reason that I listened to it and that I'm mentioning it here is that the Field Notes website was redesigned kind of recently, and the e-commerce side was built with this software. And so the software company on their podcast interviewed Jim Kudal, the guy in charge of Field Notes, and their web designer, who they used for their website redesign. And I listened to it because I was kind of interested in how the business runs and whether there was anything worthwhile to learn about, kind of about how they think about their business, and also just for the Field Notes nerdery. And I think it is really, it's kind of fascinating. A couple of the little nuggets that I got out of it were that one thing is that they claim, so Jim was saying that Field Notes is like 7 times as big as it was 7 years ago, which I think was surprising to me, and that this new clandestine edition is their fastest selling edition yet. Also, he tells a story about how they basically ran a con, sort of, to get the fieldnotes.com website, which apparently they acquired in the last few months. I shouldn't call it a con. But they flat out lied to the guy that owned the fieldnotes.com domain. So they now own that domain and the
Fieldnotes brand one. Yeah, they were fieldnotesbrand.com for a while.
And they still are, and they talk about actually what they've been using the fieldnotes.com URL for. I mean, it redirects, but they're using it sparingly to track traffic and particular ads. So, I don't know, I think there were quite a few other things in there that were interesting too that I'm not necessarily remembering at the moment. But if you're interested in web design and interested in like, field notes, and then also just if you're willing to listen to something that is like about the details of e-commerce backends of website, if there's anything of that might be interesting to you in that, I don't know, I'd check it out. It's called Commerce Minded, episode 11 is with Jim Kudal.
And there, I mean, there's the obvious appeal of understanding the Field Notes business more deeply. It's definitely one of those companies where they're really pretty transparent about how they do things, and so there tends to be, I feel like, a pretty decent appetite for people to understand the business and the people behind the business, and you know, visiting the headquarters and showing you which bathroom Jim uses and which one Brian prefers. So if you're into that, Ryan, I could see you as being someone who, if you found yourself in the Chicagoland area, wanting to visit Field Notes headquarters. Is that something you've thought about?
I would go for sure, and I will next time go to Chicago for sure. I think with that podcast is like the number that was striking to me is that they've grown 100% for 7 years in a row. Like knowing people that, having friends that have started their own businesses, that's astounding.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the other thing I think about, and I think I talked about this last episode, is that we are finding, I know Ryan and I are finding, that there are people who are buying Field Notes who are not talking about buying
Field
Notes.
That's true.
These friends, you know, friends and acquaintances who are getting into this company and buying these products, and they're not blogging about it, they're not Facebooking about it, they're not podcasting about it, but they're getting into it. And there's just something about Field Notes that is really grabbing people, whether they're vocal about it or not. And I think that's the only way you could have that kind of growth, is to really have that base that's just into it when they see it on the shelf, and then they find themselves expanding. And I think, you know, we always talk about Blackwing, we talk about Field Notes, we talk about Baron Fig, but they've just tapped into how to have people wanting more of what they're dishing out. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see how each company does it. And I look at Baron Fig, and you know, I get an email from them every 2 weeks, it feels like, with a completely new product with some kind of new spin.
Exactly.
For, you know, a $50 pin or whatever. And I kind of, you know, that they're doing it their own way, and I'm sure they're having success, and I love their notebooks, but it has a different feel, it has a different tenor and a different wavelength. And I think you'd be hard pressed to say that Field Notes hasn't just really hit their kind of a perfect stride for them.
They specifically talk about emails in that podcast too, and that was one of the other things that I thought was interesting. They talk about how they try so hard not to send too many emails, and you're right with Baron Fig. I just looked it up. I mean, 3 emails in January, 2 already in February, the month's not even half over, and they don't, Field Notes, Jim in the interview doesn't talk about Baron Fig, but he talks about how most companies using e-commerce are emailing constantly. I like this.
Yeah.
What is it? I think American Giant, the hoodie brand. I might have the name wrong. I mean, I get an email from them every single day.
Well, you gotta get your quarterly hoodie.
right. But they do
God
talk.
God forbid you should have 3 square inches of room left in your house.
Right.
You gotta fill that space up with hoodie.
You know, we joke sometimes about some of the marketing lines that are in those Field Notes emails, and how they're kind of goofy, and how they make you feel like your life's going to be empty if you don't get the new quarterly edition. But when you really compare it to, I don't know, so many other companies sending you emails every day, it really is interesting how they run their business completely differently.
I think, no, you're totally right. And they deserve a lot of credit for that, for not hammering it nonstop. And for, you know, even on their social posts and stuff, there's a sense of reserve and a sense of taste there that's coming through, which I, you know, dare say that's what comes through in their products, too. There's a real sense of taste and a sense of not jumping the shark, but also being creative and trying to stay interesting.
There seems to be a difference between social media and email, though, where people want their favorite brands to be active on social media, but you don't want to get an email from somebody. Because scrolling past it, if you're not interested, is so much more difficult than just deleting the email.
Well, I mean,
for some reason,
I spend $3,000 a month at the Pottery Barn, and I've only got so much email commerce left in me when the month turns over.
But you love reading their tweets.
Yeah, those Pottery Barn tweets.
I mean, I think, well, what's more nauseating in this twisted up stage of our internet lives than corporate Twitter accounts now becoming these like weird sentient pseudo woke humor factories. I mean, I want to just absolutely throw up on my computer screen when I see that Wendy's is like, oh, keeping it real, y'all, or like, wait. So hey, Field Notes, please prosper. You're the best thing that's ever happened. If you go public, I will buy stock in you. And what happened to me? Where did I go there? I'm back. Okay.
Don't hate on the Frosty, Ted.
Okay, so Ryan just orchestrated a wildly complex gymnastic of stationery when he did what Adam and I subconsciously refused to do, which was to buy a box of pencils and share it with friends. When he stepped up and finally got the Mars Blackwing edition, the number 4 that we talked about for weeks, that we should go ahead and buy that and then we'll loop it. And then he said, hey guys, I finally just bought these pencils here. Take them, you bunch of children. A grown up has entered the room. So I've had a chance to use them. Ryan's had a chance to use them. Adam, you haven't.
I've given them
yet.
A lot of thought.
But I'm going to kick it to Ryan for those impressions of the number 4 Blackwing Mars edition.
And it's just all the sweeter knowing that Adam still has to wait.
Yeah.
due to weather conditions, or I don't know why it's taking so long. I paid all that money to ship them to you.
Yeah, but I gave you the address for my mule, not for, yeah.
So it's
not giving you my address, Ryan.
Don't rush Bessie. She takes her time.
As far as the pencil is concerned, I think it's awesome. It looks, I mean, I love the MMX. It's my favorite Blackwing to use because I usually only draw with pencils. I write with pen. And so from a drawing perspective, I love the MMX. This one just looks like a nicer version of it, frankly. The ferrule is really nice looking, and the sandy texture is, like, subtle. It's not... Adam warned me that it might be horrible in a previous episode, and it's not. It's really nice.
So to recap, it's a nice Mars dirt kind of orange color, and it actually has little flecks of a kind of sandy thing embedded into the pencil. And it's got some sort of cream-colored print, the Blackwing 4 print, and then a copperish, bronzish-looking ferrule with a white eraser. The fleck thing is, like, to me, like, amazing. Like, the idea that a pencil could have a texture element that's done in a classy, professional way that's not cheesy or weird, but that sort of simulates the rocky surface of the planet Mars. If I said to you that they pulled it off nicely, you would say I was crazy. And so I'm with you. I feel like I'm holding an improbable and yet remarkable pencil when I hold this thing. It seems like an idea that they pulled off. How would you even think of that? And how did you fleck this thing with sand? What intern had to salt Brazilian salt beef guy sprinkle each pencil with this like dusting of cosmic dirt? I love it.
Also makes you wonder how many times they tried one to get it to a point where it was there and it was noticeable and it could be a feature, but it wasn't annoying or uncomfortable as part of the feel of riding with it, because it's not at all, but it's definitely still there. Like, if you're looking for it, you can, you know, it's not hard to find, but when you're riding with it, it doesn't bother you in any way.
I think the thing about it to me is there have been additions and there have been times where I've said, how much can you really creatively project onto a pencil? There's like a pretty limited like number of variables on a pencil. And to me, this one like has this level of creativity where you truly like somehow project the idea of like the planet Mars onto a pencil. It's something. I actually wrote in my notebook another reflection, and this has to do with the very soft core. So you're using a very soft core with this very earthy kind of really creative pencil. The softness of the number four Mars pencil makes you feel like you're writing with some kind of space rock, like a hunk of interstellar carbon, that you should be writing a message to those back on Earth. If anybody should find your bones next to this broken down spacecraft. So in a way, I think like the soft core just contributes to this weird, like, earthiness of this thing. I love it. What do you think of the number four, Adam? I'm sorry. I'm just taunting you now. I apologize.
Well, no, I've got two things, though. So I agree with you that I sometimes pause at how many variations do we need, and why do we need another pencil, and how is a variation to a pencil possibly going to make it better than the last pencil? And especially with all of us sort of clamoring for the natural pencils, and Blackwing just came out with that natural. And when they do a wood grain pencil, that seems to be the most popular. So it's almost as though what we really want is an unvarnished, kind of literally, you know, an unvarnished pencil that reminds us that there's a pencil in our hands. So finding what they can do to do something completely different that still makes it really appealing and something that we kind of think we need or feel like we need, it's got to be an interesting challenge. And then the other thing, I had written this in my notebook, but I kind of decided that it didn't make sense to get to it today. But I just, since we're talking about space rocks, I just read this amazing essay in the Best American Essays called The Moon, the World, and the Dream by Clifford Thompson. And it's about Clifford Thompson when he was 5 years old in 1968, sitting on his porch with his 19-year-old brother and watching something happen in the sky where the moon turns into two moons. And the essay has a lot of reflections on the moon and on dreams. About the moon, he comments that it's believed that we only see in our lifetime 59% of the moon. And then I'll just say that that he figures out 50 years later almost what the cause of those two moons were. And I will link to the article in our show notes. And I also want to mention that the link to the journal is the Three Penny Review's website. It was in the journal, the Three Penny Review. And they have a website, Ted, that would fit into your new web archive on our website.
Web vault. So yes. I just to tell our listeners what that is, this is something I'd done previously on to try and be as odd as possible on a previous blogger site that I had, but it's the web vault of occasionally you come upon those sites where you just quickly realize this site is from a different time of the internet when you know, before mobile responsiveness and continuous scrolling and social media muddied up the water. So I've got, I think I have four sites on there now. I hope to build that out. But it's fantastic. Some of them are really great pen and pencil sites too. There's a Floaty Pen site, which I know the Pen Addict podcast has covered that in the past. But their website's amazing. There's one called the Pencil Pages, which is like a pencil collecting website, but they're just pure HTML. They've got tables, you know, like single background colors. So we're calling that the Web Vault, and we're going to add, as Adam says, the Three Penny Press. Did you guys see the Wolf Blood Red Moon Eclipse situation? Because to me, that's very much in line, Adam, with what you're talking about. Like, we actually woke up my 6-year-old, which is rare for us. Sleeping is very sacred, so to wake her up at 10:30 was super weird. But just to look at this moon, and I had no idea what we were walking into, but just to see that bloody ping pong ball that suddenly gained all this depth of field and three dimensions and felt like it was just floating right above your forehead. Very intense.
We thought about waking up the kids and did not.
Just had another glass of wine instead. Well, I applaud that choice as well.
I did not see this blood moon, wolf moon, thing moon, but I've seen it. I've done it once before, where it just really took me. I don't know it. In all of those situations, I expect to go outside and be underwhelmed, and so the one time where you do it and you're like, oh my goodness, something is happening to the moon. Not exactly clear what it is. I know something's supposed to be happening. I'm colorblind, so I don't even know if I'm seeing everything. But just when it actually gets you and it's actually, it's really something. And also the feeling that everyone in town, or there's a lot of people around the state or the country, depending on where you can see it, that are all looking up at the moon at the same time and actually seeing a thing that doesn't underwhelm. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I missed it, much like I missed the Mars pencil.
Well, when I look at this Blackwing number 4, I experienced a similar sense of the sublime and the marvelous that I did when I took a look at the Wolfsbane blood red blood moon. Let us move on to our next topic. So, Adam, you read a nice article on The Verge, starring author Marlon James.
Yeah, we'll go from the blood moon or the wolf moon to Black Leopard, Red Wolf. That's his new book, and that's what I thought you were getting at when you started talking about the moon.
Nope, just talking about the moon.
Yep. There's what do you have in your bag column or regular feature on The Verge, and Marlon James, who's the author of a book that he described as an African Game of Thrones, just came out. It's called Black Leopard, Red Wolf. Black Leather would maybe be a different book. It's kind of what do you have in your bag? And there's a long interview with him in which they don't discuss what he has in his bag, and then they get to what's in his bag. It includes Muji pens, and he likes purple pens because they freak his students out. He has a special tea in his bag because Americans, I think he says, suck at tea. And one thing I wrote down that, I don't know, we just can never say this enough. It's just so true. He says something about writing down notes immediately. He says, in the shower even, you jump out and you find something and write it down on something, hopefully. I can't risk getting to the end of the shower and forgetting. And he also talks about slipping in the shower when he's done this and jumped out before. And it's just, I don't know, I know we've talked about it before, but it's just so true. You have to stop everything you're doing and write it down because those ideas just flit away.
Well, and let's remind ourselves of the Field Notes slogan, I'm not writing it down to remember it later, I'm writing it down to remember it now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, I like knowing that it feels like the trick to being this successful man Booker winning novelist is jumping out of the shower and writing your notes down right away. I don't know, maybe we could talk about what we carry in our bags, similar to what he's done there. I just want to add that after I got, this weekend I got his book, A Brief History of Seven Killings, which is the one that he won the Man Booker Prize for. And then I read a profile of him in which the book is described as theatrical unrepentance and unbiddable style, which can double as obstacles in a thread on Reddit from 2015 headlined, "I need some help following a brief history of seven killings," the top reply begins, "My advice would be to relax when it comes to trying to keep close tabs on all the plot links in one." So I'm going to look for it.
I think it's interesting to think about why we want to know what is in people's bags, because I think there's a sense of, like, I don't know, almost maybe is it militaristic or like Tim O'Brien, the things they carried kind of vibe, like what are the tools that these successful people kind of think about and put together into their little toolkit. For me, I think I definitely carry a pen case, but the curious thing about my pen case is that the pens that I put in my pen case end up being probably the pens that I use the least, maybe almost because they get buried in a pen case in my bag, and I when I'm reaching to put my sort of daily carry pen in my pocket, the last place I go is my pen case. I don't know if that's weird. I don't know. What do you guys, pen and paper wise, what do you guys carry around?
Yeah, so all I carry is the one field notes, and I have my one fountain pen. But in my work bag, I have basically a ton of stuff, thanks to you. So
you're welcome.
Now I have, of course, my laptop and my notebook, my work notebook, which is just garbage that I write my work notes on. But then I have two other fountain pens in there, a couple other pens, and sometimes I take my little pencil booklet that I hold all my different pencils in these days, and a sharpener and some extra ink and all kinds of supplies that I'll rarely ever use during the workday. But as far as what I carry, it's just the one field notes and the one pen.
But that's pretty much that it. To me, that's a great point, is that I'd say between the three of us, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, that we've gotten it down to a pen in the pocket, a notebook in the pocket, and even with that, you've achieved a level of security, knowing that you can get a lot done just with those two.
Yeah, I completely agree. I carry a lot of stuff in my bag and a lot of extra field notes, but it's all extraneous and I barely ever touch any of it. So I've got like a pack of craft that is kind of like, I don't know, it's an emergency pack, which I don't even know what the point was until while I was in California on this trip recently, someone did need a notepad. And all I could offer was a craft notebook, and they looked at it and went, no. And then I've got a field notes signature edition with 1.5 pages of a novel that I've been rewriting forever, or just restarting, I guess, forever. There's a sketchbook where I almost never draw in, and like I said, a few extra notebooks. And then I carry three books, which is pretty good for me. Again, almost completely extraneous, because I try to just read one thing at a time. A lot of extra cords, a Leuch term that I use as a bullet journal, and then an iPad, which just is a note, which is, I don't know if it's interesting to our listeners or not, but I have found that, like, if you've got to do video calls for work, much more successful to use the iPad. It sounds better. People see you better. People comment on it when I use an iPad instead of a phone or instead of the computer for some reason.
Do you carry a DVD and then, library?
I've got it all digital, actually. it was some advice from my buddy Ted.
I will remind you that a DVD stands for digital video disc, Adam. So you can go digital while still remaining dedicated to the IP independent DVD.
I'm just hoping Amazon will slurp it up from me at some point.
This is a good segue into a listener message that we got via our website, which is, of course, takenote.space, where you can find things like the Web Vault and episodes of the podcast and a few blog posts that have gotten slightly sporadic. But you can also say hello to us, send us a message. over at TakeNote.space. This is a message from Ramey, who is a coworker of mine at Rice University. Happy to have all of my listeners at Rice. What's up, Kathy? Okay, Ramey says, new listener, really enjoying the podcast. A few episodes ago, you talked about keeping note of books you've read, movies you've seen, or in my case, shows and performances I've attended. I'm currently using a Leuchtturm 1917 hardcover A5 notebook. You know he's on the inside when he's calling it an A5. That's fantastic. For journaling, but at this point I expect it to last a few years based on the frequency with which I journal. I would love to hear your opinion on keeping multiple notebooks and journals at one time, which I think is a really good question because I think... those of us who really like using notebooks and like to fiddle with different stuff and try different things, you do end up starting different books, keeping several going at one time. Maybe you change your mind, you decide to bring it back. I don't know. So what do we think about that topic, keeping multiple journals maybe more in a more deliberate way, Ryan?
I mean, obviously Adam's got a lot based on what he's talking about having in his bag. I can't do it. I have one exception, but mostly I have the one book. I've got to finish the whole thing. I got to write in every page, not leave any space.
Celebrate staple days.
Yes. And so, which is a great transition into the only second book that I have, which is a very nice, larger size notebook that I have where, so every staple day, I write
You've got the Tomoe River paper.
I do.
And the creme de la creme.
It's the Nanami Seven Seas notebook. It's really nice and has that great paper in it. And so every staple day, I write a little bit of fiction based off of a notebook prompt from Adam. What I've been doing. So once a month, I do that on staple day. And then what I've been doing in this other notebook is rewrite. I've been revising and revising, and then when I've got them to the point that I feel like they're ready to keep, I'll write them in that nicer notebook. So that's one that I might have for years because it's 400 pages or something like that. But as far as keeping more than one at a time, I can't do it. That's my one exception.
I love that you've got this great notebook and it's, you're reserving it for these sort of more polished things that you've put together, you've thought about, you've revised and refined. That to me is really cool. That's almost a level of monkdom. Maybe the first G of the chapter you've drawn out as with gold leaf and I think that's super cool. I'm totally incapable of that level of precision.
Hopefully, that one will end up full of things that are worth reading someday.
I love that whole process you've got. Is the point of doing it on staple day, is it just about having a set, marker that you're going to do it? Or do you, I know you use one of the prompts from the newsletter that you can subscribe to at takenote.space, but do you take things from the notebook that you've written previously as some of the inspiration as well, or are they kind of unrelated?
No, completely unrelated. So I did that in the first book, and since I'm new to all of this, it just kind of became one of the things that I do. And so when I get to that page, then I go and look through the prompts that to find something that strikes me with an idea, and then I just write something out, and then it is what it is in my field notes, but then I go and revise it and try to make it a little bit better. And I've typically written 3 or 4 revisions of those, and then after that I just write it into the nicer notebook.
Where do the revisions go? In the field notes or on the computer?
I have them. No, I'm handwriting them with pencil, and I have a garbage notebook that I just write them in and tear them out. But I'm saving them to sort of look through and see how the editing process works. So first I rewrite the first draft, and then I write each draft separately and I staple them and then I have them so I can see if they've gotten better or worse, I guess.
I love the garbage notebook too. I think you should share a photo of the garbage notebook.
I can do that. I have also, yeah. I'll share a picture of the first page of that wherein I say something to the effect of, "This is my garbage notebook. Please don't damage it." Yeah. And it's just pages ripped out of the front.
I saw an author read, and I'm blanking on her name. Oh, and at this reading, or maybe it was in an interview. I did see her read, but maybe it was in an interview. She talked about how important it was when you're doing creative writing to have a garbage notebook that you don't treat as precious at all, because then you're not treating the words as being precious, and it's so important to just feel like you can write anything down in it. The author is Donna Tartt. It was Donna Tartt who wrote The Goldfinch and the first book of hers that I like that I can't think of the name of.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I write it in pencil, and like what I do on Staple Day, there's permanent in those books, and it's a first draft, and it will be what it is, but after that, then I'm writing it in pencil, and I'm free to erase, and I'm ripping it out, and you know, try not to be too tough on it because I want to do a few versions of it and I'll fix whatever I want to fix the next time, but it's the process that I'm doing anyway.
And I'm highly impressed by that process, but I do want to advocate for kind of the other side of it, which is more the approach I take, where as soon as I fully embrace the idea that no page of any notebook of mine was precious, that unlocked a little something for me. Like I don't go back and revise necessarily. I don't have a special notebook where I go and, you know, kind of transcribe something notable. I have my field notes and I treat it for the cheap pages stapled together that it is. And that's what best serves me and my, you know, what I want to do. If it's tossing it to my kid to like scribble something in, you know, I don't worry about that kind of stuff. Like I think for me, I had a certain release in the idea of keeping a notebook or, you know, that worked for me. And I think, you know, to go back to the original question of keeping multiple, I think that's why for me, it works better just to have the one is that for it to be the place where everything goes. You know, if I was keeping track of books that would go on a certain page, and I might hold that certain page, but realistically speaking, I think for me to keep a separate notebook for any particular topic would just never hold. Like it's all I can do to keep a single notebook without losing it halfway through and, you know, starting a new one. So I embrace the one notebook to rule them all philosophy. Where everything I got is going to go into that one book until that book's done. Then I'm going to tuck that book away and get a new one, and everything I got's going to go into the next one. And, you know, what I think what's missing from that is that I don't go back and reflect on my notebooks a lot. One thing I did do actually at the end of this calendar year that I got a lot of satisfaction from was to look through my notebooks and find all the quotes from my kids that I've written down. And to, I mean, we did like a photo book. So I ended up putting a bunch of those quotes in the, like, you know, Flickr photo book or whatever it was. And that was really satisfying, but that wasn't like an orderly process of saying, I have one notebook for my, you know, kids' quotes. And I have another notebook for this. It was more of, you know, kind of, I had to dig through and find all that stuff. But I think it's great that Ryan has this amazing, way that you use your notebooks, and that's fantastic. And I got my not amazing, very, very layman's way of using a notebook. And Adam, God knows what he's doing up there in Chicago. It's been very cold
I'm just carrying around extra notebooks for no reason. We should all do it Ryan's way.
But how often do you give away a notebook? Adam,
I don't don't know. I always intend to.
Do it more.
I tried to the other day. It was turned down.
It was turned down. That's shocking.
Well, they wanted a legal pad.
That's right.
What am I going to do? Start carrying legal pads in this bag?
No.
I have found that giving away, and I think I tweeted this for all of those. I mean, there's so many people following our Twitter feed. I know it's redundant, but giving away stationery is every bit as satisfying to me as using stationery. And I think that's what a lot of people in this stationery community have found. And it just, it holds true to the very end. And so on that note, I will say, let's do this again, my friends. What do you say, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have fun.
Chin chin.